Welcome back to another episode of In the Money, where we break down trading strategies and share actionable ideas with you, the trader at home. I'm Chase Cotnor, a brokerage content editor here at Fidelity Investments. Joining me today, as always, is Tony Zhang, the chief strategist and co-founder of Options Play. Tony spent the better part of 16 years helping to educate clients on a variety of trading topics and also risk management strategies. Tony, as always, it's great to have you back on the program. I think, like our audience, I'm always interested to hear on, what's going through your mind. What are you seeing in the marketplace? And so I would love to kick off today's conversation talking about economics, macroeconomic updates, and any other notable market developments that you're watching. So what's on your mind? And good to have you back, Tony.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chase. From a macro perspective right now, with earnings season largely over, with the exception of maybe a few retail names that are still left to report next week, the earnings season so far has been a pretty positive earnings season. So corporate earnings have been quite healthy going into the second quarter of this year. Right now, I think on most investors' mindset at the moment is really this tug of war that we're currently seeing between inflation and the labor market. We continue to see over the last couple of weeks signs that inflation is ticking higher than economists are expecting, and at the same time that the labor market is slowing down a little bit, deteriorating a little faster than economists are expecting. And this tug of war is really shifting expectations for rate cuts in the second half of this year by a pretty substantial amount over the last couple of weeks. We've swung from expecting one cut to three cuts. And then if you look at the PPI numbers that came out this morning that surprised substantially to the upside, this is really dialing back rate cut expectations here for the second half of this year, back down to two rate cuts, expecting one in September and potentially one in December. So at the moment, right now, the markets are kind of, the sentiment is being driven by expectations on rate cuts because, a couple of weeks ago when we saw those poor labor market numbers come out, rate cut expectations rose substantially, and we saw a pretty significant boost to equities as a result of that. We've seen this broad rally across the board led by the NASDAQ 100, the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100, to new record highs back-to-back for the last few days. At the same time, we saw small caps also break out above a major resistance level. IWM broke out above that 225 resistance level that's been in place for quite some time. That's now targeting the 2024 all-time highs for small caps. And if you just look at overall, the market breadth across the board has been quite strong or improving here over the last few months, where now 60% of all S&P 500 stocks and the NASDAQ 100 are trading above their 200-day moving average. So you're seeing broad participation on this rally. So going into the PPI numbers this morning, we saw a pretty strong equity market, and arguably even with the PPI number surprising to the upside and shifting expectations for rate cuts, it seems like the market is still largely shrugging off these inflation prints because, as you can see, the VIX is still trading below 15% on this PPI number. So we're still seeing some of the lowest levels we've seen in 2025. The tariff concerns have largely faded, with markets kind of pricing in smoother conditions ahead. If you look at the VIX, if you look at put call ratios, you look at kind of market sentiment indicators, they all seem to be in a much more complacent, bullish reading at the moment, and that aligns with the strength that we've seen here overall with the markets. And the question is just whether or not inflation will continue to surprise to the upside. If that does happen, that could start to tamper down expectations for rate cuts for this year. But if you look at the sectors, we've seen strong leadership from the consumer sectors, from tech, and even from the housing markets. We've seen substantial gains out of the home builders. And these are what we consider typically interest rate sensitive sectors that tend to perform well while we are in a rate cut cycle. And it seems like markets are still pricing that in from an equities perspective. The bond market is shifting a little bit in terms of rate cut expectations, but equity markets at the moment seem still quite optimistic going forward that we are going to see lower interest rates ahead, and that is likely going to spur capital expenditure investments from a substantial number of sectors, as well as kind of favor some of the interest rate sensitive sectors like banking and home building.
Yeah, that's right, Tony. And when you break it down like that, a few things really stand out to me. I think one of the biggest is going to be the shift in sentiment. Like you said, it wasn't that long ago, maybe months, maybe weeks ago, the conversation was all about persistent inflation and if the Fed could stay hawkish and, you know, what are they going to be able to do? And now we're starting to see signs of that inflation potentially cooling, at least leveling off in some cases. And I've seen reports, right, between 2 to 3 rate cuts, depending on who you ask and where you're getting your data from. Second thing that kind of stands out to me as I look at this report and some of the data is the VIX being below that 15-ish level, which is, you know, significantly lower than we were just, you know, a couple weeks or months ago. If you had to take in all of this information as an options trader and you're trying to weigh out the different data points, Tony, is the market just becoming really complacent, or is it really the fact that we're kind of factoring in the economic confidence and sort of the expectations for the Fed moving forward? Not that you have to say all of one or the other, but is there some kind of data point that would suggest to you that option traders are looking at one over the other moving forward?
Well, I definitely think that from a volatility perspective, we are moving into a slightly different regime of a lower volatility. You can call it a complacent environment to some degree, but it really is just a lower vol regime. And, you know, lower vol doesn't necessarily mean that now is a good time to be buying options necessarily, because low vol regimes tend to stay in low vol regimes for quite some time at times. And especially going into, you know, what is a relatively quieter season, you know, towards the end of summer, going into Labor Day, you know, I don't necessarily expect a huge uptick in volatility here over the next few weeks. And I think largely that is being represented by options traders. You know, I think this is still an environment, even though relatively speaking, it's not particularly favorable to be selling volatility or selling options. But I think given kind of the market environment we're in and the volatility regime that we seem to be entering, I think you're still going to continue to see a fair amount of options selling going into this, you know, next month period, if you will. And, you know, with regards to your question, I think inflation is probably going to be the big macroeconomic number that people are going to keep a close eye on to help determine whether or not that expectation of low volatility is going to remain.
Yeah, understood, Tony. That's super helpful, right? Because if you think about it, inflation's going to adjust how people see equity markets and volatility, which is then going to impact option traders and how they interact with equity markets. So yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And as I think about the macroeconomic view, the backdrop, I always like to get a little bit more tactical, right? We have a lot of option traders watching this podcast. And so with that backdrop in mind or that context, Tony, what are some different trades that you're looking at or other market participants are kind of eyeing given what's going on in this recent regime?
Yeah. So, you know, one setup that I'm looking at right now is Morgan Stanley. And I think, you know, basically anything interest rate sensitive is worth taking a look at these days. You know, last week we laid out a trade on Lowe's, you know, because we expect that home builders and generally real estate will benefit from a lower interest rate environment. Well, another segment of the industry that tends to benefit from interest rate cutting environments are banks, and Morgan Stanley, I think, is one that's positioned quite well here for this market environment. And the stock recently just broke out to new all-time highs. It broke out above that 145 resistance level, which has been, it's been consolidating around that level for the last couple of months. It finally broke out here just earlier this week on strong volume while outperforming the financial sector. So, you know, those are the things that I like to see on breakouts, the new all-time highs that confirm, you know, what could be potentially institutional accumulation of this stock as it hits those all-time highs. And if you look at the business here for Morgan Stanley, it looks quite attractive from a valuation perspective, whether you look at it on a forward earnings basis or if you look at it from a price to book perspective. It's trading at a discount to its industry despite growth and profitability metrics basically being in line with most of the other major banks, if not even ahead of some of the other major banks. You know, they recently just announced Q2 earnings, and we saw both revenue and EPS broke both revenue, both top and bottom line beat expectations here. So we're seeing strength in both their securities business as well as their wealth management business. And as equity markets and broader markets hit all-time highs, that's going to generate additional fees for their wealth management business. And we do expect a relatively strong IPO and M&A deal activity environment that we're heading into the second half of this year and into next year. And I think as a top-tier global deal maker firm, Morgan Stanley is going to take advantage of that environment. So basically the three core businesses of Morgan Stanley, at least two of them, we're seeing fantastic environments for those businesses. Trading, you know, as volatility slows down a little bit, that's going to bring down trading revenues a little bit. But I think they've been pretty steady in terms of that that business. So that in the wealth management business and deal making business is really what I think is going to be looking quite attractive here for Morgan Stanley going forward, especially if you consider their return on tangible equities and, you know, in the 18% range, which is solid relative to the valuation that it trades at. Not to mention they also recently just raised their dividends and approved the $20 billion share buyback program. That is definitely going to be of interest for shareholders. And I think for those reasons, I like this particular breakout and playing for further upside, even though I'm generally not a huge fan of chasing stocks at all-time highs. I think this is an example where in the macro environment that we're in and given the underlying fundamentals, the technical setup makes sense to look for further upside. So I think the way to play this here is to utilize an option strategy that limits my risk to the upside. And this, I'm sorry, my limits my risk to the downside because we are chasing a stock at all-time highs. So you're basically buying high and hoping that the stock goes even higher. And whenever you do that, just statistically speaking, the risk tends to be a little bit larger when you're chasing stocks at all-time highs. So the best trade structure that I like to use in these types of environments is to use a call spread. So I'm going out to the September expiration, and I'm looking at buying a 145, 155 call spread. So I'm buying the 145 calls for about $6.30. And against that, I'm going to sell the 155 calls for about $1.60. And what that does is it brings the net debit of this upside call that I'm buying down to $4.70. And that's to reduce my overall risk from $630 per contract if I was just to buy the 145 calls down to $470 per contract. So you're talking about a 25% decline in overall risk that I'm taking and a 25% reduction in the capital required to get exposure here to the upside. And that gives me about a 1-to-1 risk reward ratio on this particular trade. If Morgan Stanley gets above 155 by that expiration date in September, my maximum gain is $530 per contract versus if Morgan Stanley goes below 145 at September expiration, I'm risking $470. And this way, I'm basically able to play for further upside while limiting my downside risk, and at the same time, doing so with a limited amount of capital because, you know, Morgan Stanley at $147 requires roughly, you know, close to $15,000 to buy 100 shares. Here to get equivalent exposure through options, I'm only spending $470. So you're talking about 3% of the stock's value. So, much more capital efficient way to get upside appreciation with limited risk.
Yeah, Tony, when I hear you talk about this strategy specifically, it's about risk management, even though we're trying to play the upside. And so I know in the past I've talked about or asked you about the difference between using a single call option versus a spread, right? We're trying to work between the pros and cons of the two strategies. But I want to shift gears for just a moment here today and talk about both sizing and timing of this trade, for example. Let's say a trader wants to go bigger than a 1-by-1. And just for context, when I say 1-by-1, I just mean we're buying to open one call and we're selling to open one, right? So there's kind of one option for each part of this spread. How might we go about approaching that, Tony, in like a bigger position size? So for example, do we just jump in and do like a 5-by-5 as an example right away all at one time? Or is there some concern or benefits potentially to scaling into the position over time? In other words, maybe you buy a part of the spread. Then the next day you buy a little bit more. And the next day, like, you're kind of easing into the position, reducing theoretically your timing risk. Like, how do you proceed, and how do option traders that you coach and talk to, how do they do this? Do they do a smaller but larger trade, or do they just break it up over time? What are your thoughts to that approach?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So first of all, you always want to think about sizing relative to the size of your portfolio. So if we think about, let's say, a hypothetical portfolio with $100,000 in that portfolio, you always want to start off in an initial position that's based on a percentage of your overall portfolio. A common starting point, if this is your first time establishing a position in a stock. So in this particular case, Morgan Stanley just broke out above to a new 52-week high. You're just entering your first position here. It's typical to risk somewhere between 1 to 2% of your total portfolio value towards an initial establishment of the trade. So for example, if let's say we're using 2% of a $100,000 portfolio, that's $2,000. Each contract here is going to cost about $400 to $170 per contract. And that means you can trade roughly four contracts to have this total trade risk 2% of your account. And what that means is that if the trade goes completely south, meaning the exact opposite direction that you expected to, and you lose 100% of the premium that you paid for this option, you are left with 98% of your portfolio intact to continue trading. And the goal is to make sure that no single trade will blow a huge hole in your portfolio. Now, once you've established that initial trade, my opinion is that you don't add to that trade unless the market proves your thesis to be correct. Meaning, if this trade starts to go against you after you initiate the trade, the only option that you really have is to close the trade and reevaluate at a later time. But if, let's say, Morgan Stanley starts to rise from where we are right now, which is around 147.5, let's say in a week's time, the stock is trading at 150, 152.5. At that stage, because the market is starting to prove your thesis to be correct, that is where you do have the option of potentially adding to that position. And this is something very common that professional traders will do, is that they will never add to a losing position, but they will continuously add to a winning position. And that is the... the mindset that I think is incredibly difficult for a lot of retail traders to kind of wrap their heads around. You know, we do tend to find that most traders will tend to add to a losing position, hoping that they can get themselves back to break even. And, you know, a lot of times what they do on the opposite side, when the trades are going in their favor, they take profits too early. And that mindset has to shift, I think, if you want to start, you know, putting yourself onto the path of what a professional trader would do, which is making sure that you never add to a losing position. But if a trade starts to play out the way you expect it to, that is where you do have the option of potentially adding more exposure. So maybe as a trade goes higher, you might add another 2% of your portfolio, maybe buy another four contracts of a similar option at that stage. But those are that's generally how I think about sizing and timing for these types of trades.
Yeah, that's super helpful, Tony. And I think what I love about that is you can do that for both the entry, or kind of entering this position, but also the exit too. It doesn't have to be an all or nothing on either end of this trade. You could ease into it, maybe, if it makes sense within your account and if it's a winner, but there's also the potential to slowly get out of a trade if maybe it's not confirming your thesis right away. So that makes a ton of sense to me. Appreciate that, Tony. As I look forward into the future, so we talked about the macroeconomic backdrop. We talked about some of the different, you know, equities that have been doing relatively well, and some option plays. What are we doing in terms of earnings? Is there any earnings plays that are on your horizon that, you know, seem worthwhile to take a look at, Tony?
Yeah, like I said at the top of the show, we are heading into the tail end of earnings season, but next week is actually when we get the big box retailers reporting earnings, like Walmart and Target. And Target is actually a name that I actually brought up here a few weeks ago on this particular show with a trade. And I think this is a good time to revisit that, because Target is heading into earnings next week with a valuation that's incredibly compelling at around 14 times forward earnings, while it's delivering margins that are better than their peers, about 75% of their big box retailer peers, and a dividend yield that is head and shoulders above its peers. So, you know, from a fundamental perspective, it is trading at a valuation that's half of Walmart, Walmart. It is more profitable than Walmart. It generates more yield than Walmart, yet it trades at a valuation that's half as much. And that's why it's so compelling. And then if you look at the chart here, you know, we're starting to see some strength here for the stock over the last couple of weeks. The relative strength is improving. So that's why I'm taking a bullish stance on Target next week heading into earnings.
Got it. Makes sense to me, Tony. And as I look to not only the future, but maybe the past, I know that there's some other trades we've talked about in the past. You know, if we want to do a look back at one of those trades, like, for example, Micron, how has that been? How's it been performing? What are some of your thoughts? Take us through this look back, Tony.
Yeah, so Micron is a stock that I really like within the AI space. They're the one of the primary suppliers of high bandwidth memory chips to NVIDIA. So if you like NVIDIA, yeah, it's a great stock, but it's expensive. We're approaching 40 times forward earnings. Micron's trading at 10 times forward earnings. So I really liked this stock a couple of weeks ago when it pulled back to that 110 level. And at that time, we bought the September 110, 130 call spread, looking for a bounce back towards that 130 level. So we bought that vertical spread for $6 at the time. That spread is now trading at $11.70, which means that we've made a 95% return on this trade. And this is a great example to a follow on to what your question before on that Morgan Stanley trade of when do you add to this position? So this is from my perspective where it makes sense to take profits on the trade that we just placed a couple of weeks ago on Micron because we've made 95% of our return on our capital. And then if you want, what you can do is you can roll this to a further later dated upside call spread. So same trade structure, but buying ourselves more time going out to the October expiration, buying the 125, 145 call spread. You can pay about $6.35 for that call spread. And what you're basically doing is you're rolling virtually all of the profits that you made on the first trade to pay for, you know, almost the entire spread here out to October. So you're basically buying yourself significantly more time all the way out to the October expiration. You now have capital appreciation potentially all the way up to 145. And because you rolled the profits from the first trade into the second trade, your risk to reward ratio becomes far more favorable, because if you just look at buying the October 125, 145 call spread right now, you're looking at about $635 worth of risk to potentially make $1,365. So that is a risk reward ratio of about 2-1. But when you roll in the profits from the first trade into that second trade, we're now risking a total of $65 to potentially make $1,935. So as a relative dollar amount on the initial trade, which was $600, now I can potentially make $1,935 on the back of that $600 investment. That gives me a more than a 3-1 risk reward ratio. And this is how professional traders leverage the trades that are starting to work out in their favor to turn the risk to reward ratio substantially further in their favor and hit home runs, while at the same time cutting their losers ruthlessly, so that no matter what, they keep their winners, they keep their losers small, and they try to continuously hit home runs with trades like I'm doing here with Micron.
Thanks, Tony, for that look back. That's amazing. And I love that you're pulling in some of the institutional, the professional investor insights for our viewers at home to incorporate today. And speaking of which, folks, that's going to be a close for today's session. Tony, thanks for coming back with us on today's program for In the Money. We want to thank everyone for spending some of your time with us here on this program. It means a lot to us. We're trying to share as much options information as possible. And before I forget, don't forget to tune into the Trading Strategy Desk follow-up session, which is going to be tomorrow. 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can sign up for that session by going to fidelity.com/in-the-money-follow-up. And if you're looking for further insights, or you might have missed today's live show, be sure to sign up for the Active Investor Weekly newsletter to receive a highlights of trades discussed today. And you can go there by visiting fidelity.com/Active Investor Weekly. That's it for today. I'm already looking forward to next week, but until then, be safe, everyone. Take care.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of characteristics and risks of standardized options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with options allocation strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options, such as spreads, straddles, and collars, as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you're most comfortable with. As with all of your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Indexes are unmanaged. It is not possible to invest directly in an index. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play, and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use. Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2024 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1109225.1.0. Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.